Mormons can wait to see which one will they choose. This week in Mormons, you get a chosen Smith style. With more and knee upon the host, G up in high. How's the big bearded guy from Missouri?
Hey, if you're listening, it's time for This Week in Mormons. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us and tune in. Appreciate you doing so, and we hope you enjoy the next few minutes as we talk about the issues that matter, and Al does a game show sort of background thing.
Yeah, we have a shtick. There's things we do.
Like that. So anyway.
What video game was that?
I don't know. It sounded like a 70s type. So let's make a deal. I could see a man, like a white guy with a white man fro and good sideburns.
Can you do
jacket.
Sonic the Hedgehog? Go.
I actually cannot do Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm very sorry.
That's right.
I forgot what the music for Sonic sounds like. I don't remember.
It's okay. No, you know what, Jeff? It's whatever. I take lot of time to know the weird Sufjan Stevens and TV on the radio bands that you love and could play any song of theirs that you ever wanted.
I haven't listened to TV on the radio for a while, actually.
And you just ignore all of my interests. You care nothing about Sonic the Hedgehog.
I've
80s Nintendo emulated games.
I've made a commitment, actually, to watch news radio. You should be very proud.
Have you really?
Yeah, I haven't started yet, but I've made a commitment to do it.
This is the greatest show. Oh, I love that show.
I know. So once we finish The West Wing, I might jump into that one.
You're watching The West Wing again?
We've talked about this. It's been going on for months. Regular listeners will know that we've been watching The West Wing.
Oh, I thought you'd lapped The West Wing.
No, the wife had never seen it before. See, it's the kind of thing where I've sort of, you know, softly nudged that we should watch it. And one night, looking at Netflix, she's like, "Want to put that West Wing on?" And I'm like,
"Yeah." You're like, boy, do I.
Oh, yes,
pants
I do,
off,
as a matter
West Wing
of fact.
Goes on, the night is done.
And then it's that kind of situation where then you spend the whole show just kind of like grinning and staring over your wife like, like, right? Right?
What's hard about
right?
that is the
right?
first like five episodes are pretty mediocre. It took a while to get going. And so you'd be like, please love it now. Love it as much as I love it, having seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there and then, you know, she was kind of like, it's okay. It's all right.
My favorite is when people watch it for the first time and like everything is quotable again. They're like, yes, patriotism.
Well,
yes.
The thing I love about my wife watching it is she does not like that many of the episodes are sort of flashbacks. They start at a certain point. This happens all the time, you know, in media res. And then when the episode kicks in after the credits, it goes back and says like Monday, 8 a.m. And you know when it started, it said it was Friday. And we're like, no, you don't realize how much they do this, actually, until you start paying attention to it. Many West Wing episodes start off and then hop back a few days and build back up to that point. It's a very common tactic. And my wife is not a fan of it. I'm neutral. But it's like,
I never noticed it.
But when there's a flashback, when she's like, oh, great, great, this again. Oh, I get to find out about... Oh, the reasons behind Josh's, you know.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like that is mostly with Josh. Josh and Amy, they had a lot of flashbacks.
A lot of things
on.
Happened. So anyway, in this election season, it's fitting to watch The West Wing once more. Because why not?
Absolutely. You know what I watched yesterday? Apollo 13. I
haven't seen that for a while. Good,
great movie.
Good family entertainment. Good, actually.
Lost in the library.
Here's the thing. Apollo 13 would be perfect family entertainment. We want to talk about family standards, except for in the very near beginning when Kevin Bacon makes a sexual reference by talking about docking the ship and the thing, which is very clear sexual
the ship.
Allusion. If you took out that little joke, which isn't the worst thing in the world, then there is nothing questionable for children. But there's that one, I mean, it's PG, but there's that one part right there. That one part.
Well, even that, I feel like a 10-year-old, he should be able to laugh at that.
No, Al, you don't want the 10-year-olds to laugh at it.
What are you talking about?
You want to shelter your children so that when they get out in the real world, they're thrown for a loop. That's what you want to do.
That's fair. I mean, there's many children, even today, that are raised on Disney alone and have no idea that there are people that act in real life on the screen,
well,
not just animated characters.
I'm excited because our bunker in the Appalachians is actually supposed to be done in a couple of months, and then I'm going to be moving the family. I'm pumped.
Yeah,
it's going to be great.
Good. You don't want them. You don't want them out there where the paved roads are.
Most people aren't this familiar is, this with is, the.
What was the movie that was the Village? Does that ring a bell? The one where they like were out in this space and the elders were trying to scare the kids into staying in there.
That spoiler alert, everyone. But yes, that you find out in the end, it's not actually olden time.
You don't need to call spoiler alert for a movie from 20 years ago.
I believe every M. Night Shyamalan movie deserves a spoiler alert because there's always a twist. Always a twist. Predictably so. Yeah, I remember The Village. I remember it well.
the horror.
I remember it primarily. I was thinking about it the other night because I decided to watch Jurassic World for a second time, which has Bryce Dallas Howard, who is also in
The
Village.
The greatest. I don't know how you've only watched that twice, Jeff. It's as good a movie as that.
We're going to spare our listeners that debate that we've had a few times on the show. Go back random episodes from the past year.
The greatest of our generation. Jeff only hates it because it was cool to hate it. He loved it in the beginning.
It was a great movie to put on while I just worked and didn't want to pay much attention.
Yeah.
More fun when I'm not thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so anyway. So
hey, did you see the did you see Bryce Harper over the weekend?
Did he pay tithing?
He swore at the umpire. Did you see this?
I believe this was a mini scandal. The Angels are doing so poorly this season, I've almost shut my mind out of baseball. But
it's great. No, so he got some bum call from a referee. Then they go out and they're all cheering because they win. And he takes the time to turn over to the referee and is like, "You suck." But like, you know, a more aggressive variation of that. And then he goes back to jumping up and down like a fanboy with his team.
So he's psyched that they won. And then he goes to, okay.
You could tell something was eating at him. He needed a good FU to the umpire. That's our boy. You know what? I've always said this, and you can go back and read my transcripts. I have always said that once you pose naked in the body issue of ESPN, language just creeps in on you.
Bryce, stay active.
Stay with us, buddy.
You know, if you want to get into the gossip, I have no idea, you know, as far as him, church, whatever, what have you. And you travel a lot with baseball. But if the Nats are here for a homestand, I don't know which ward he goes to if he goes.
I've never heard which ward he goes to.
And you'd think you'd hear about it. You'd think out here the people would know, oh, yeah, Bryce. Like, everyone knows the ward Harry Reid goes to. I know that ward.
Yeah, but that's Harry Reid. He's too slow to move. I bet Bryce has an ascot on, and he's wearing pointed European shoes and shows up in just dark glasses and is like, don't look at me.
And he has cat-like reflexes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's him.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Does
Bryce
anybody like? I don't hear tale of which ward Mitt Romney goes to.
Oh, everyone. Well, now he's in Utah. So you tell me, Al.
I have no idea. I've only seen him at the movies. Conspiracy? Perhaps yes.
Apparently, he's abandoned Massachusetts because the man registered to vote in Utah. So I guess that's his domicile.
He's home, huh?
No more Massachusetts. Yeah, but home for him is, you know, the Midwest. He grew up in Michigan. Come on.
Jeff, how is your life? How is your world?
Fine, like we've talked about. It's you know, stuff's great.
You're well. Good.
I got to do some sweet podcast consulting last Friday.
No, is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Word gets out about those O-Neaters.
That's O-Netters.
Yeah. And
you know what this is? Presidential flashcards?
Uh-huh. So it was lovely. I was taken to lunch and had my brain picked about podcasting. How does one podcast? How does one launch a podcast? Thank you to those of you who took me on that journey with you. It was delightful.
Who are these people?
Wonderful people.
Oh, I'm sure they're great.
Their anonymity.
So your wife is gone with your baby.
Yeah, she skipped town. So,
well, that's a shame, Jeff. Now you're no better than I. Feels good, doesn't it?
Not really. I mean, there's like you have so much like time on your hands when there isn't a kid to take care of or anything. I come home from work and it's like, okay, well, it's 4 o'clock and I have nothing to do for the next 6 or 7 hours. So I've been working a lot more, basically. I did see Captain America. That was good.
See, I'm in the same boat, Jeff. I work and I watch Captain America.
Did you see Captain America?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh my gosh, Al.
I heard it's like Jurassic World Part 2.
If only it could be that good, but Civil War was a spectacular film.
Was it for real good, or was it like joking?
No, it was for real very good. I think it was one of the best Marvel movies.
Whoa.
It contained what I would easily describe as the best action sequence ever done in a Marvel movie.
What?
Yes. And
Spider-Man showed up?
Oh, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it was quite excellent. Across the board. Very, very good flick. So, go see it, everyone. That's my life. And
Jeff gives it one thumb up.
I'm going down to the Bahamas on Saturday for a couple days, so that'll be exciting.
Well, that's what's going on. I'm excited for you. I'm here in Salt Lake for a little bit. I'm in Green Bay over the weekend, though.
Why Green Bay?
Well, I'm flying into Green Bay and then driving to the north. I'm going to the northern of Wisconsin.
Are you going to like Duluth, Minnesota or something? Like,
listen,
what are you doing?
I don't know where. I got a buddy turning a birthday and we got to go up there and make fire in the woods. I don't know what we're doing. You know what I forgot to do? I forgot.
You forgot to fly here for my birthday.
No, dear people in Brooklyn that I was supposed to go and visit from the show, I did not go see them.
Nice job, Al. Way to help us build our brand.
No, we connected.
Great job.
And I was like, I'm on my way. Nada. No,
You actually said I'm on my way.
No, I didn't say it. I said I'll try and put some, because they're out in Brooklyn. It's an hour train ride for me. And he had some friend from Alabama needed him to go to a cemetery somewhere and do something. He's like, we can go do that. And I was like, buddy, I don't think I'm in for a day. I might come out and shake your hand and give you a kiss on the cheek, but I don't have a day. And so we were like, yeah, so expect me later tonight. Happy Mother's Day. Might come crash the dinner. Steak and potatoes. That's delicious. And then I just got busy on a Sunday.
My, how the tables have turned. I seem to recall a period when you were living in New York many years ago when a certain damsel wanted to meet up with you and have lunch or go out and kept stringing you along all afternoon by texting you.
Oh, yes.
And saying, I'll be right there, I'll be right there, I'm held up, I'm shopping.
No, but that one, she actually coordinated the meeting spot and then told me to wait there.
Yes, and then you sat around for hours, I believe.
An hour.
And she kept blowing you off. And you said, fool, I ain't got time for this.
Yeah. No, that
you walked away.
We broke up. Apparently, this was interesting. The same Aaron girl. So I talked to somebody that was a mutual acquaintance. He said, oh, yeah, Aaron said you and her, like, you guys dated for a little while. And I was like, what? What? I was like, no.
I don't think we've been on a date, let alone many dates.
To necessitate
an entire relationship.
Yeah. No, that's pretty funny. Anyway, okay. Jeff, as is the nature of this beast, we are here to talk about Mormon things and not just Bryce Harper. Though we love Bryce Harper.
Or Captain America, because Captain America is probably Mormon.
Yeah.
Not the actor Chris Evans, but think about Captain America. He's very, very, you know, he's very good.
Could you imagine tracking into him? You're like, whoa. All right, we're gonna baptize you. He's like, you could Chris literally Evans. Hold me underwater for an hour. I'd be fine. David Blaine, imagine that. That's like a baptism.
Okay, how old are you? David Blaine. If you're going to do a magician reference, it has to be Chris Angel. No, it's the only one that matters.
No, David Blaine, he was the guy who was like 8 minutes in water. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
but Chris Angel is a mind freak, Al. The man is a mind freak.
How long
freak.
Did he stay underwater?
He could probably stay in the water
I'm
for
saying,
years.
In the world of baptizing a convert,
Aquaman.
How great would that be if he was just like holding under and you're like, no, come up, we're going to die. And he's like, no. Start the clock, people. 8 minutes. Let's do this. Like, that'd be the greatest missionary tale of all time. You'd be like, the fish was coming up and eating my britches. There was nothing I could do. He's just in there.
It'd be an outstanding baptism. You know, he says, hey, I think I really need more time under there to really, like, soak it in.
I am and, so righteous. The sins are going to completely wash away because I'm doing a second soak.
So while you're sitting there watching and the witnesses are standing, there's a little digital clock just running up the time while we're all just waiting.
I think that would be a good add-on to sort of distract from the covenant of baptism, where people could like maybe make it more about the event.
About them.
Yeah, and more about the amount of
time
would
be really
you can hold your breath. I feel like that's a good pharisaical move we could take.
And imagine the kids. They always want kids to go up there and watch.
Oh,
what a
God.
Great way to keep their attention.
They'd be chanting by the end. They'd be like, repent, repent, repent.
We might have stumbled upon a new missionary opportunity. I will run this up to the mission president in our area.
It's just an idea. I mean, I'm not sold on it. It's just an idea. Something to think
Maybe
about.
We could write a book about this.
We should.
New approaches to, it's going to be called, here's the title, New Approaches to the Baptismal Ordinance by Alan Doan.
And just be like a pamphlet or like a book?
I think it could be a full book. We might not get Deseret Book on board, but we could definitely get Ensign Books, maybe Siegel.
Jeff, right? Did you know that Siegel Book is owned by Deseret Book? Those are one and the same book.
It's one of those weird things. I think I've heard that. It's one of those funny little things in Mormonism.
I was reading an article in The Atlantic this week. That's how I show that I'm so cultured, because I dropped that. If I would have said economist, that would have been pretentious. But I was reading an article in The Atlantic this week, Jeff, called The Paradox of Choice.
Paradox of Choice. Yeah,
yeah, and saying that it's complete garbage. There is no paradox of choice. They have new research that's come out that said more is more, and it's better, and it's good. No one's been able to recreate this paradox of choice study. So,
what about like good, better, best? Isn't that kind of related to the paradox?
Now of part of this. Now, part of this is with the with this, like the idea that more is better. They gave an example where these people started selling a bread maker, but in the beginning, when he sold a bread maker, there was no reference point. You didn't know how much you were supposed to pay. You were supposed to pay for a bread maker. So, a $240 bread maker, they introduced a more expensive line, $400. And it drove the sales of the $200 bread maker. Which way? Up. That's right, Jeff. They went up. So here we have Deseret Book.
What does a banana cost? $10?
Here we have Deseret Book. People hate Deseret Book. They love Deseret Book. You have a love-hate with Deseret Book. What do? You make Siegel Book. You give them an alternative. You give them a choice, Jeff. More choice. These people. This Sherry Dew, she did it. She was brilliant. Or was that under?
But they bought Siegel Book. They did not start Siegel.
Listen, you don't know the first. Yeah, you do.
That was
you
an
actually
acquisition.
Know quite a bit about it. All right. Well, it was a good buy because
still,
it drove.
It's a fair point.
It drove sales. I'm sure sales are up.
Well, this is the fair question to ask, though. You have Deseret Book, and their brand is pretty well defined. So, how does Siegel Book differentiate? Because typically, when you're one company and you own different brands that sell products, it's because you're trying to hit different market segments.
No, I mean, really, you could just be.
Doesn't Siegel just sell the same
choice stuff? You're going the opposite of the paradox choice.
Or is this more of like a Carl's Jr. Hardee's situation where you're basically selling the same things, but they just sell them in different locales depending on which one has.
Still, no. You see, oftentimes they'll be in the same strip malls. This happens.
Then how does that work? I want to understand this from a business perspective. Do they sell?
You're creating false competition. So there are people with loyalty to the brand Siegel Book. And there are people. So like, imagine I go into Deseret Book and I have a crappy experience.
That's not something you have to imagine at all. But yes.
She made me a fresh brownie and gave it to me as I walked in, and I still didn't like her. Like, they did everything they could. I didn't like her. Well, when I walk out of there, I want an alternative. I don't want to feel cornered into buying my books from Deseret. You give me Siegel. Boom. I got Siegel. It's the same. I wouldn't be surprised if at some level Sprint, T-Mobile, and AT&T are all owned by the same jerk somewhere. Like some guy, Trump or something. And imagine he owns all of them. That's just the nature. You have this crappy industry run by crappy people.
Okay.
And you're just in there. And you hate it, but you're forced into it, but you don't feel as bad because you have choice.
By the way, when you Google Siegel Book, what do you call that? Especially when you find a company and then, you know, they list out like the six sort of subcategory. You know what I mean? They sort of show up. Like if I were to look for you guys,
yeah.
What do you call that?
Yeah, the quick links.
The first one listed on Siegel Book is Modest Clothing, followed by Books.
Oh.
Books in all caps. They need to work on this.
Siegel Book.
Store locator. Home decor. What home decor can I get?
Oh, you can get like knitted wall hangings.
Look, it's the same things I can get at Deseret Book or Amazon for that matter.
So LDS Daily released a little article on some of the for-profit endeavors of the church. It just sort of listed out a bunch of them. And there's quite a few. Now, this is interesting because the for-profit arm of the church, they are an investing arm. And so they invest in like people. People say, I mean, they get some great people that work over there that are like very aggressive and drive very good deals for the church. They're run like a fund that just goes and makes, they exist to make money. They're there to make profit. This is separate from like the tithing arm of the church.
Absolutely.
In most cases, I would imagine there's some instances where tithing funds would be used to support a venture here and there. But for the most part, it's all run completely separate and accounted just right. And so there's some comments on these about like well, they shouldn't be shielded from tax stuff, but they're not shielded from tax stuff. They pay taxes on their income here. It is interesting, though. There was also some showings of two of the entities in the Panama Papers. Did you see?
Yeah,
that?
I saw that going around this week. Was it some of the ones we've seen? It was just like Bonneville.
We also saw Taylor Swift showed up at the Panama. Really, anybody doing any sort of tax strategy should be showing up.
Emma Watson showed up because she bought a home in London.
Oh, that was it. It wasn't Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
it was
through
Emma.
A shell company. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm trying to have a shell. Shell companies have a purpose. It's not just tax evasion. It's actually holdings and stuff. They have reasons to.
Al, invest. Now is the time for you to come clean. Do you have overseas holdings?
I didn't quite make it into the Panama Papers. I'm still working on my enterprise. But so the church has a very, very active, very aggressive for-profit arm. And their real estate stuff, I think, is the most interesting. Some, you know, the land that they own down in Florida. When I was a kid, they developed a big piece of, they had like 10,000 acres, right, in Missouri that they bought. They just held for like 50 years. And then all of a sudden, Kansas City had grown out to this area, and the land was very, very worthwhile now. And they bought it like $500 an acre as farm country, and they just waited long enough and then developed it as like very pricey real estate. And they did the whole model where you had the town downtown, the residential around it. It was beautifully done, very well developed. And then they made a really good penny on that. So kind of some cool stuff. I dig this stuff. I like seeing the enterprising way of this small desert religion making their money.
Good now, people. Alden, how do you respond to those who say, that's good, it's fine, it's the for-profit arm of the church? But they might say, well, why? And at the end of the day, we still don't disclose any of these things because it's privately held. What do you say to the individuals who express discomfort with the for-profit dealings of the church? Because while we can speculate and assume that these are things that help the church stay in the black overall, that help serve the mission of the church, we don't know if the money is then shuffled around after taxes to help fund other parts of the church that are necessary. Because, you know, the books aren't open to us, so we can only hope and assume.
Oh, on the for-profit arm, the books aren't open, right?
The books aren't open anywhere on the church, not in the U.S. anyway. I mean, we don't know anything about how the money's spent, whether it's for-profit or non-profit. But what do you say to somebody who's still uncomfortable with it, who doesn't understand why we have Mormon Inc., you know?
Well, I think it's actually important to go back to the root of why this exists at all. So in the very beginning of the church, couldn't get financing to do anything. Yep. Right, they couldn't get financing to take care of its people. It couldn't get financing for the welfare. Because when you're starting from zero and asking people to pay tithing, and they do pay tithing, but you can't get anybody to buy the cows that are donated. You can't get anybody to buy the land that's donated and actually turn that into money where you can go and help people. So they were kind of stuck. And so they established some banks that went bankrupt. They had they tried to start their own currency, I think twice, once in Missouri, once in Nauvoo, well, and then again in Utah. I mean, maybe there's multiple attempts at this. But the financing of the growth of a city was something that the church was very focused on. And in the beginning, when they were doing this, they were financing many settlements and cities across the West of America and all the way down into Mexico. And so the core of the church in the early days was to build an enterprising arm of the church that could support this stuff, the actual land development, so that where its members were being drawn to. Because remember, go back 50 years, people were still leaving their country and coming there, and the church had to support them. And so this was a way of, let's say we get a good chunk of tithing to go make interest on this, to go make money on it, so that it was working for you to be a good steward of money. I think you have to exist in this world. And so there's I mean, at this point, it's gotten a little bit muddier just because the church has been successful on both sides. But throughout most of its history, it was successful in one and not the other. Either the members weren't paying tithing, or the tithing of the church wasn't supporting its members, or the for-profit arm was failing and you were using like tithing funds to try and prop it up and keep it going. And so to be here where both are running smoothly is actually, I mean, that's a very good thing. And so the people that would say that we shouldn't be in that, I mean, at this point, you can even see they're divesting more and more. They are selling things off, but they are still buying and investing. But what do you do when you got a huge pot of money? You either go put it in some massive trust fund, like think of the tithing money, No, right?
You don't do that. You do what Apple does. You just have tons of cash on hand for no reason.
Just leave it in the bank somewhere. No, you put it back in and make it work. You go and make communities beautiful. You go and repurpose things and improve and like make savvy real estate investing deals. I don't know. I don't have a problem with it, so it's hard for me to defend it really because I'm not thinking about it. But
what you brought to that is, I think, a valuable perspective. And so often I believe we forget our own history. Of course, we are a little bit wary of not being self-reliant after everything we went through early in our history. I mean, the church was not out of debt or debt-free, I believe, until early 1900s, right?
They got the Sbarro in the ZCMI mall.
Yeah, I mean, we were millions of dollars in debt, you know, when Lorenzo Snow became church president. He's known for pushing tithing again and getting us out of debt.
That's right.
Since then, I don't think the church has ever been out of debt, but obviously we've been afraid of that and looked for ways to boost that up. And that's why we, you know, did things like, that's why we've built for-profit ventures. If you want to know another little bit of fun trivia, back during the 50s and 60s, when under some of the leadership of Henry Moyle, the church built a lot of buildings at the time, larger meeting houses. We thought they could attract more converts. President McKay was very big on PR efforts, on making our presence known. And if that meant building larger and more impressive buildings, that was part of it. And the church actually ran up a deficit to finance a lot of buildings. In the end, it was okay. But that was a big period when we were basically just building buildings.
Rolled
like
the
crazy
dice and left it all on black, man.
Pretty much.
It's interesting though. You look at it now, and the church has like billions of dollars of assets under its direction.
Of course, yeah.
But like, when you're a church that doesn't necessarily exist, doesn't exist to make anybody rich, what do you do with all that money? What's the right way for you to? I mean, you can't just give it to your buddy Bernie Madoff to go and invest in stuff. You got to do something with it.
How would this be? This is what it should be.
Melaleuca.
Just like with any other investments, you get an email from the church that says, you've received dividends.
We're paying the tithing back. Well, I love that they do stuff like the Perpetual Education Fund. I can't wait for them to shut down all the church schools and do more with the money that's spent there and put in other places. The humanitarian aid efforts, I mean, a lot of that is tithing run, but it's off. I would imagine it's supplemented tremendously by the for-profit work the church does.
Perpetual Education Fund is very interesting because I guess it's sort of fallen apart in recent years.
Really? Is that true?
There's some stuff that's been, some sources have told me, this isn't secret stuff, but Elder Ballard oversees it, and he has been trying to right the ship. Because basically what you're dealing with is bishops administered the Perpetual Education Fund. Bishops are not trained loan officers or anything like that, just like they're not trained therapists. They're doing the best they can with the tools they have. And they found that the program was suffering and not being run well because the bishops had so many other things on their plates. So from what I've heard is they've actually installed a former like hedge fund manager to get it all in the black and make sure it runs better. But for all intents and purposes, it was kind of moribund there for a bit. I'm not sure about the current status. Anyone, especially in developing countries where it's used.
It's so interesting. I think we as a people sometimes, we value the idea that the Lord makes all this go with just idiots at the helm, right? And we almost are offended when we hear that like experts are brought in or really smart people are given positions to go and like help move this stuff along, because if it was just like Joe Schmo sitting up there trying to make this work, then there's part of this is like, oh good, the church that we gave them a lot of money, but it's just Jesus people that are trying to make it go. But when you say like, no, we brought in a hedge fund manager, and really it should probably be run like a fund is run and invested and like returns reported and looked after and aggressively trying to get the best return on that stuff. In terms of who you're investing in and in what circumstances they're going after, like you should structure a way where they have the highest chance of success. But when we do that, there's part of us that's like, oh, I can't believe they'd bring him in, not the pro.
Yeah. You want to know another kind of fun church financial thing?
Yeah, more tidbits,
I came
please.
Across recently.
Absolutely.
So
we're only 30 minutes in and one story.
Who cares? So
one story.
So as we know in the U.S., the church is It's tax exempt, does not have to disclose finances. We've talked about that before. But in other countries, while it may be tax exempt, it's required to disclose. And so you can learn a few things. So in Canada, apparently, basically you find out that it's something obscene, like 70% of Canadian tithing goes to BYU.
No way.
Yeah. Now, I don't think this is fishy by any means, because under Canadian law...
So many Canadian people go
sure,
to BYU.
Sure, there's that. I mean, BYU is clearly 70% Canadian. But the main reason why is under Canadian law, for tithed money to remain tax exempt, it would have to be spent in Canada, but there's a loophole unless it's used for educational purposes. And so my understanding from this, from my minimal knowledge of these things, is to assume that that money is funneled to BYU, where it can be used and not taxed at all. And so for all we know, it's just shifting money around. I don't think it's just like, hey, Canada, you're paying for BYU, tough caboodle. Probably funds that otherwise would go to BYU are offset by Canada and pushed somewhere else. I mean, at the end, it's all a big pot.
Well,
different.
Otherwise, you'd have to spend 100% of the tithing received in the same year that it was received.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I thought that was kind of an interesting.
That's why you start a shell corporation, Jeff.
That's why we have at least one actual shell corporation, folks, down there in the, I believe it was registered down in Jersey, one of the Channel Islands, somewhere out there.
Oh, everything's in Jersey now. Well, that was a good little spat, man. We had a lot going on.
Church finance is a fascinating thing. For something that is largely opaque for most of us, it's still a pretty interesting subject of discussion.
He's absolutely right.
I do declare.
Well, the next story is obviously yours. What would you like to?
Oh, it is. Well, shuck of the darns. I'm going to talk about
shuck of the darn.
Michael Otterson, everybody. A few weeks ago, probably only two episodes ago, maybe three, we mentioned that Michael Otterson, who has been the public relations head for the church for a number of years, and he's worked for the church for 40 years in some kind of PR capacity, is retiring. He is retiring. He's stepping down. One of the guys who's in the church history department is going to come in and take over. So that's cool news, and we've talked about that.
The second of the three Nephites, if I remember.
Yeah, exactly. So... This kind of flew under the radar, but earlier in the week, the church announced new temple presidents for a number of new temples, as they often do. No big deal. So you go to this link. There's a list of, you know, Star Valley's a new one, Columbia River, Chicago, Mexico City, Hong Kong. Oh, and then right down there at London, England Temple, Michael Robert Otterson, 67 years old.
M.R. Roberts.
Along with his wife, Catherine Barry Otterson, will be the temple president and matron of the London, England Temple. Now, he's not retiring until August, and then I believe he's supposed to take up his new charge sometime in November. But they kind of just quietly announced that. Very interesting.
I think it'd be a funny joke if everybody called him Otterman instead of Otterson and just pretended like they couldn't understand when he tried to correct them.
Otter Dad. It should be Otter Dad. What? Now, we wrote about this. One thing I thought was interesting, though, is while they didn't make a big deal about it, the headline reads, New Temple Presidents Called for Star Valley, Hartford, London, and Other Temples. Now, Star Valley and Hartford are brand new temples, so it makes sense they want to announce that. You know what else is another temple on this list that's also brand new? Philadelphia. But yet Philadelphia...
Where is that one?
Philadelphia does not make the headline because, well, the London England Temple, which has been there since the 50s, and arguably no one really pays much attention to a new presidency being announced. Let's just make a nice little nod to Brother Otterson.
When your gig is PR, you know how to roll this stuff out. Even if you're not rolling this stuff out, you know how to roll. You know what it probably is? It's probably somebody in that department that's like, goodbye, old boy. I wish you the best. I'm going to get this last one in for you just the way you liked it.
Basically. Unless something crazy happens this summer. But I mean, I don't think there are more handbook changes coming. So he might just be on cruise control till he retires.
When does Philly open? Philly is getting close.
Philly's coming up, I think, near the end of the year.
Is September 18th, I believe.
Yeah. Fall.
Open house starting August 10th.
Cool.
Boy, it is going to be delightful.
That is one I'm going to try to hit up. I'm going to... We could day trip that thing. Pop up to Philly. Check out the temple.
I'm in.
By we, I meant me and my family, but you're welcome to come.
Screw you, Jeff.
You are welcome to come.
I can't believe.
Look, I invited you to Hershey Park. Last week, you posted about the new coaster at Cedar Point, and I said, let's make it happen, and you ignored it.
I said, let's go.
I have extended the olive branch countless times. The branch of friendship.
All right.
You are like one of the wild branches of the olive tree. I cannot safely graft you.
You have dunged about me and grafted in the good plant. Let's see here. Oh, you know what? I'll give you a quick aside. The one that I loved. So there's a man. Was this at the temple that this happened?
It was at the, I think, the Temple Visitors Center.
So you go to the Temple Visitors Center. The man finds
in St. George,
the missionary's
St. George
gas card and steals it. He says he was prompted by the spirit to steal the gas card of the missionaries and goes to the gas station to buy six people gas, just random vehicles. He fills them up. And so he got kicked out of the visitor center in St. George and then received a prompting to clean up around the building and found it. Like, I think that's great. Good
you
for
just,
you,
you love
Richard
this story, huh?
Zeh. I think it's a great story.
Even though he stole from the missionaries.
Just some 35-year-old dude that's like, hey, guess what? I'm Robin Hood and you're Prince John, you missionaries. I think that's hilarious. So it tells him to clean up. So he said that he's leaving. The spirit told him to clean up stuff on the side of the road. And then he got into the red passenger car of the missionaries and found a mission gas card inside. That's a very generous cleanup along the side of the road. I think that's hilarious.
I mean, good on him. Good on him. There is no gas station in right by the temple. He had to drive somewhere around. The temple's in a gas station island.
He probably stole the car. This is Grand Theft Auto. In order to go and
I mean, I'm just
off.
Saying it requires one to be a little bit more deliberate. It's not like there was a gas station across the street or anything. He had to drive a handful of blocks in some direction just to find it.
Also, elders, lock your car, huh, buddies?
Oh, I hope he went to the one by the Cafe Rio that cost $289. That's a ripoff for St. George. Let's hope it was that one. That sounds good. You all know the one I'm talking about, right? You know that one, St. George listeners. You've been there.
Now, what do you got?
Now, that said, the man felt prompted by the spirit, which can easily be a trump card, right? It's like, hey, the spirit told me to do this.
I've used that to get out of more stuff.
Now, I saw some people comment on this and said stuff like, yeah, just like the spirit told Nephi to behead a guy, right? So, while we believe in that, and it was an important period in history, it does bring up an interesting discussion, basically, on how do you know when a spiritual prompting is a spiritual prompting and you know it is from the Lord? That is an important thing to understand. I'm not saying that this man was prompted by the Spirit for this. Unless the missionaries were not
being
charitable.
You're not saying that Nephi was actually prompted by the Spirit.
I believe he was. It makes sense. I mean, for all we know, the missionaries weren't doing their service. They were bad missionaries. And the Lord is
this
like, you know
what?
This
was a punishment.
Use their funds and help out the people in the community because they're not helping them. I don't know. But right?
Yo, boy.
Well, I mean, what do you say to the person who says the Spirit told me to do this? And you just say, well, no, it didn't. They say, yes, it did. What?
Well, I believe there's a few verses in the Doctrine and Covenants where there's a man who claimed to be getting revelation from a stone in the hat that was similar to the process that Joseph had used. And in the end, there's quite a bit of criteria given around qualifying that revelation. And I think we could use the same principles here. Mainly,
boom,
people, the spirit is going to be,
I have stymied you.
No, I mean, you can go and read it for yourself. I don't want to say the right and the wrong way to feel the spirit. And honestly, for this guy, if he felt the spirit tell him to go and do this, good on him. And I don't think that it's a thing though where the spirit tells you to go and steal stuff from people unless it's brass plates, unless you're like saving a nation from dwindling in unbelief.
Okay, fair enough. Al, I have a major announcement for our Utah listeners.
What up?
On Saturday, May 28th, apparently Tupac Shakur will be performing with the Tabernacle Choir. Or rather, he will be performing at the Salt Lake Tabernacle.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Is it, though? Is it?
What is more stupid than somebody making a fake Facebook event?
The fact that somebody made a Facebook event, which has 6,000 people interested in attending, and said that Tupac is going to be performing in the Tabernacle.
May 28th.
It's not that great, but I like that somebody bothered to, you know, make a Facebook post for this. You'd think you'd see this on like the Rexburg Squirrel or whatever that thing is. But this.
Jeff, let me tell you, a Facebook post is actually easier to make than a post on the Rexburg Squirrel.
I mean, and just look at this. Here's someone who says, ain't no way this is real. Good. I'm glad they figured that out. And then, you know, his comment says this is fake. He's been gone since 96. And why would he come to a Mormon tab? That's a fair. All of these are fair questions.
Y'all playing with my emotions. A lot of he has risen jokes. Okay. Well, this was a waste of my time.
Okay, so I have been researching, and I hate to tell you all, but he isn't alive. The event is photoshopped. This is more fun to find the people who are trying to do the public service of telling everyone, no, guys, this guy's not actually alive.
I've been Googling around. And it's not there. Yeah, well, great.
Anyway, that happened. That's all.
What a waste of our moments, Jeff. Do you have any... Follow it up with something more meaningful, would you please?
So there's a couple that was profiled on the Today Show.
All right.
I don't see what's so funny there. A couple was profiled on the Today Show. This has gone on for years. They found out 3 years ago, they found out that they were infertile. They couldn't have any kids, which is rough for anybody, for sure. And so they had said, you know, we had been talking about how it feels to hear pregnancy announcements, which we've all seen, and thought it would be funny to create our own infertile versions. And they were cracking themselves up brainstorming in the car. So first of all, good for them for trying to find a good thing in this. Because if you were to trying to have a family and found out it ain't going to happen naturally, that's a blow. That's tough no matter what. And instead they say, let's make fun of it, perhaps as a coping mechanism. So anyway, they shared a number of their photos. Lots of fun things, like a sign that says bump ahead and how women stand there like they're pregnant. Instead it says dead end.
Wait, how did they find two babies in the end?
They adopted the babies in the end. Oh, so they still have kids. Yeah, it has a happy ending. But I like the one where it's, you know, the happy couple holding a can of Prego, which is the worst way to announce being pregnant, by the way. If you do that, you should be defriended by everyone who knows you. You're not worthy of the audience you have on social media if you do that. But then they took a Red Baron pizza and says, we're barren. Like they're barren?
All right. You
like Abraham's wife?
Are the worst. But
thank you.
Hilarious, Jeff. These people, these cute Utah people, just hilarious. They got two babies in the end. That's what matters.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Good for them. I mean, they found the humor in it. They still have a family.
They got babies in the end. That's all we need to worry about, people. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Well, please, now go ahead, Al. Take us somewhere better. Take something more enlightening.
Yeah, so Ron Walker. Church is...
You don't even know who this is.
Ron Walker, famed church historian, man of matter and reason. He wrote a book about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. This man has passed away. And our hearts go out to Ron Walker. Great man.
And he died of lymphoma, you jerk. Al, you're a jerk.
He died of cancer.
You're a jerk, Al. Eat my shorts, Al.
Eat my shorts. Jeff, would you have another story?
No. Tell us more about Ron, your academic hero.
No, you know who else passed away recently? Bob Bennett. And this is just the worst.
Tell me more about Bob Bennett, who you also are very familiar with. Tell me about Bob.
Bob Bennett is a Utah senator. The man was very influential in Utah.
He was a Utah senator, but yeah.
That's what I said.
He was a U.S. senator, actually, from Utah.
Whatever, Jeff.
Not a Utah senator, who are pointless.
The man was very, he was sort of a bipartisan leader, and that's why everybody loved him. He had strong conservative values, but wasn't afraid to go and make a deal across the aisle.
Yeah, and you're not reading.
He was a fellow 6 foot no. six man. That's why I liked him.
You're taller than that, but good.
I am a skosh taller than 6'6", but still good. Nice. Yeah. Sorry to see him go. He was a bastion of morality and goodness in Utah politics.
Now, I believe he was Peggy Fletcher Stack's uncle.
Son of a bee. That man was a coward and a monster.
No, she's been posting some pretty compelling and like.
You know what I continue to entertain myself with? McKay Coppins has decided that he is actually a notable figure himself. He's decided
figure.
And he'll post things like, come join me for an hour of discussion on politics. Starting now.
Where? Like, is he on? What is he on Slack?
You're not
like,
missing anything. No one goes, and it's McKay Coppins trying to talk about politics.
Where is this discussion?
I always want to
happening?
Joke and be like, "Wait, are you going to invite a friend, or do we have to listen to you try and talk about politics, you moron?"
Was this on Twitter? Where did you see?
Yeah,
this?
It's on Twitter. He's found Twitter to be his home. He thinks that the people he thinks that he has more friends than he does. I feel like. You know, he's one of those guys where he's like, you guys, we're all making jokes together, right? And they're like, no, we're legitimately laughing at you, not with you, McKay. Go away.
Trying to find his announcement where he says...
It pops up all the time, and I cannot contain myself. I've had to unfollow him on a number of fronts.
Oh, you should never unfollow McKay, because if you unfollow McKay, he will follow you.
He will follow me?
Yeah.
As an unfollow?
He'll follow you around. He'll find you.
Oh, I was like, why would he follow people that unfollow him?
He has a certain set of skills.
Everybody should unfollow him. They'd get the free follow.
I'm still trying to find you.
Anyway, I know those were two very serious stories.
I want to find McKay's announcement.
I apologize for having to bring the gravity of the situation back, but I feel like one of us has to be the serious storyteller here.
Yeah, sure. I'm still trying to find McKay.
What would you like to share with our listeners now?
Well, mostly how important McKay Coppins is for all of us.
No,
all
Jeff.
Of us, Al.
Jeff, come on.
I guess BYU's building a new engineering building, so there's that news, folks. I care very little about this.
Yeah,
one,
we don't
but,
care. No one cares. Who's,
but they're
going to
build a brand
this?
New building at BYU.
Is this Canada funding this?
Probably. So it's an $80 million project, which means that about $50 million of it's coming from Canadian dollars. That's what we can expect.
No.
So it does say it's
Canada's
donor
dollars go over. Not 70% of the dollars spent are Canadian.
Hold on. Though, that said, the headline does say donor funded. So perhaps it is not funded by the Canadians.
Who donated?
They're really swinging for the fences here. 200,000 square feet, 5 stories tall, folks. 5 stories tall. When will anyone make a run at the Swicket? When will anyone say the Swicket was not a mistake? Let's build up, not out. Let's combat campus sprawl and build another tall building to rival the Swicket.
Yes.
Why
absolutely.
Does no one do this?
I like the quote in here. Lab space is more valuable than gold. No, that's not true. How much money have you ever paid for lab space, you master's candidate? Anyway,
you should say, well, really, like if someone offered you lab space versus a lot of gold, which one would you accept?
You can either have your first year salary or wait for it, lab space.
Because you could potentially take the gold.
What do you choose?
Rent
engineer?
Some lab space.
Yeah, gold can be exchanged gold. For goods and services.
There was a great Donald Trump meme here. I think you would love this one. I always shared it on our Facebook wall.
Oh, the Cinco de Mayo one.
So you saw, if you didn't see this last week during Cinco de Mayo, Donald Trump.
What was he thinking when he shared that?
First, I questioned if it was
his actual account. When I saw it was his verified account, I was like, why?
Yeah, me too.
Why?
Well, first, Donald Trump, he doesn't think. He, you know, the man shoots from the hip.
No, wait, before we get going, we're all Trump supporters here, right?
Of course, everyone has to be. It's a requirement. So someone photoshopped this for the uninitiated. Trump's in his office in Trump Tower, and he's sitting there eating originally some tostada taco nacho bowl kind of thing, and it says something like the best fiesta bowl in the land is here in Trump. The best taco salad's here in Trump Tower, and apparently he even got the product wrong because it's actually not one you get from the Tower restaurant. You get it from some cafe elsewhere.
And then he said, "I love Hispanics."
Yes, on Cinco de Mayo. Not I love Mexicans. I love Hispanics. Everybody
That's
loves
the PC way of saying Mexicans now, Jeff.
Sure. Incidentally, by the way, I saw another story that underneath the tostada, I'm going to call it now, was a picture of one of his ex-wife, Marla Maples, in a bathing suit, like under his stack of papers.
No, how can you tell?
The people analyzed it. They found it. It was there in the photo. So that's the original photo. Some enterprising young soul photoshopped in some funeral potatoes, put them on the image, and it just says, the best funeral potatoes are made in the Trump Tower Cultural Hall. I love Mormons.
Hilarious.
It's very simple. Very simple, and yet I approve wholeheartedly.
So psychologists have unlocked some secrets here. They have analyzed Mormon missionaries and people that serve missions and struggles that you run into on missions, and came up with the top 10 mistakes to avoid on your mission that will let you serve more better.
Okay. What are they? Just read off the 10 to me.
1 through 10 are masturbation. That's it. That's the only thing they talked about is actually... I'm just kidding. No, the top 10 list for missionaries coming home or whatever, they say avoid having unrealistic expectations, worrying about things that you can't control. All these are fairly obvious. Thinking and speaking in absolutes, such as I have to or I need to. I think this is true for any 18-year-old.
Is I have to or I need to an absolute?
I need.
Like, what is the non-absolute of I have to? Should consider?
The truth is, Peter Pan doesn't love you. Focusing on negative rather than the positive. Failing to see the big picture. Going overboard with good things, such as being a bit of a perfectionist. I feel like that's actually one that that I struggled with. I genuinely thought that the Lord would not bless me unless I was perfect.
Well, the reason why, Al, is because before you were born, your parents were happy. They were free.
What? Let's see. Failing to follow priesthood leadership principles, which involves charity, patience, and long-suffering, as opposed to forced manipulation. Now, that's another one I feel like missionaries fall into often, a game of trying to manipulate the companion into doing the things they want to in order for them to be happy instead of just being happy themselves.
Well, that's preparation for marriage, so that's fair.
Yeah, but good. You got to manipulate. Absolutely. Yeah. Good call, Jeff. Letting anger and fear get out of control, not being quick to forgive, and not being sufficiently self-disciplined. These are the top 10 lists for succeeding in life, people.
I kind of feel like number 10 might need to be number 1, or at least in the top 3.
Self-discipline is
at the core of how effective you are as a missionary and as an adult later on in life.
So self-discipline for me was very closely tied to going overboard with good things, such as being a bit of a perfectionist. I kind of felt like if I could be self-disciplined enough, then I would never be a minute late to scripture study and never miss a day in my journal. And so then when you miss that, you feel like you don't have self-mastery and you're not going to be good enough to be blessed and the Lord doesn't love you anymore. It's not true. Turns out God just likes that you're there and going in the right direction and doing his work. Turns out.
Well, I've got, in our closing moments here, I've got some great news from the website mansionglobal.com, everybody. Mansionglobal.com.
It needs to be mansionglobal.limo, I think is what they should get.
Or shouldn't it be like mansionglobal.caymans or .jersey?
Yeah.
It's got to be. It makes sense. So the state with the most McMansions is Utah. And what they're defining this as is that Utah is home to 3 cities with the highest proportion of houses with at least 15 rooms.
Okay.
That's the rule. So number 1 is Provo Orem, where more than 2% of the homes in Provo have at least 5 bedrooms and a total of 15 rooms, which is more than double the percentage of mansions in every other U.S. metro area except for 3.
Yo, boy.
Other ones, Ogden, Clearfield, and Salt Lake City. Now, McMansions are, you know, a step above just a big house. Usually it's a giant, crazy, you know, mansion, but they're pre-planned is usually how McMansions are. Anyway, Provo's killing it. I assume this is because of our rate of childbirth.
Well, they just need that many rooms, right?
Well, yeah, you need a wine cellar when you're LDS. It's important to have. Where else are you going to put all your yoo-hoo? Come on.
All of my yoo-hoo? Yeah. Well, that actually doesn't surprise. Utah is a hotbed of cool people.
You've got
cooler.
McMansions. You've got the Paul Mitchell School.
Yep.
You've got massage schools.
Yes.
You've got everything you need. Everything you need in one metropolitan area.
Let's see. So also, did you see our good friend Ryan Hamilton on Colbert? I don't know why we didn't think to do all the gratuitous self-congratulating posts about this, but everybody else did. But turns out Ryan Hamilton, funny guy, got on Colbert. He's been on Conan, now on Colbert, and did a bit on canceling your gym membership. So you can go give it a watch if you get a chance to see him. He's a very funny guy. He was opening all last year for Drew Carey on the road, and has done quite a bit of stuff. He's getting bigger and bigger. We're rooting for him. So I also really like him because the man will turn down bits that like would compromise the standards. If he's gotten into some good TV show opportunities, but sort of needs them to be able to needs his character to not be a shady dude. He just doesn't want to get into that. So kind of cool to watch him continue to rise and find more and more opportunities without compromising his standards. Good on you, Ryan. Way to be. Glad you're.
Well, I mean, Al, that's kind of similar to you. I mean, when they wanted you to be on To Catch a Predator, you politely declined.
Yeah, I said, listen, guys, don't tase me, bro. Don't tase me. No, or Eddie.
I remember it well.
The dating shows. Remember the dating shows?
I remember. Oh, I don't know if we ever talked. I don't know. I don't think we ever talked about that publicly. Maybe
no. It was very embarrassing. But Bravo and VH1 both found me as a great potential to be on a dating show, and I didn't realize until halfway through the interview that like the virgin Mormon homeschool kid from a farm that worked at a quilt shop, like I was like, oh, you want me to be the patsy? I'm the idiot here. No, I'm not gonna do that. I'm out of here.
And then you'd prove them all wrong, Al.
Now I'm an older virgin Mormon from Missouri homeschooled that. I've failed everything. I'm going to go and wallow my sorrows in Trader Joe's dark chocolate-covered almonds. Jeff.
Those are with the turbinado sugar.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us here. You can always email us, contact@thisweekinmormons.com, or visit thisweekinmormons.com. We have all the shows and the articles and the things for you there. Come and enjoy them.
And a great place to see even some of the things we've talked about today on our Facebook page. Basically everything we've mentioned
is on our Facebook
page. So, hit that up. Follow us. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram, which has the worst new logo I've seen.
Jeff, it's about the picture, not the camera.
Yeah, right. Sure. But anyway, thanks for taking the time, everybody. We appreciate you joining us this week. And we look forward to joining you next week as our voices resonate through your ears. And we make the world a better place together, one episode.
Together we rise. That's right. Jeff, open shot dome 2020.
Mic drop. Boom.
I'm recording now. I've got two Beef and Cheddar classics coming up thrown like ragdolls in the sky.